Mark Coleman, welcome back to Sunny G Radio here in Glasgow. You made it twice. You've made it twice, Mark.
I know.
Astonishing.
I know. If I get on the third time, I'm going to get a little trinket of some sort, aren't I?
I can assure you that's not going to happen. The third appearance.
Pack it all into this episode then.
Or the trinket. The only reason you're back on is because you criticised the music choice and said it wasn't your music choice the last time. So I thought I'd better adjust.
It was hijacked. I was a subject of misrepresentation.
Right.
But anyway, look, it's all good. All music is good. So yeah, we'll just go. We go with it.
I know you've got a couple of selections for me today, but we'll come back to that. Mark, just a wee reminder, you're based. Tell us where you're based and what you're up to just now.
Based in Malaga, Simon, but spending a lot of time up in Alicante and Torrevieja in particular, in preparation for this FIWFA World Cup Nations in October this year. So, I'm up and down the coast.
Okay, a wee bit to unpack there. The FAW, what does that stand for?
So it's the Federation International Walking Association, which is the international, recognised by FIFA, actually, in a recent paper published by FIFA, they're recognised as the world governing body for walking football.
Okay.
And they are the sort of international side of the WFA, which is the Walking Football Association, which is probably better known in the UK,
okay.
And sort of chief administrators of the game.
And do you think that's going to evolve into being part of FIFA, part of the whole
official? It will do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it will do eventually. I think that's the way it'll probably go. I mean, it's a good start if they recognise the federation in that respect. Then it's got to be a good thing, isn't it?
Well, one of the things that all the associations across the globe will want to do is know that there's a governing body, not just a figurehead governing body that takes all the money later on, but that sets down standards, health and safety standards, and drug testing, you know, all that stuff that comes into sport. That's what they'll be tasked with. And there'll be a lot of people, like, I know that's the case in Scotland, that the SFA would want to know that all these things were in place before they would consider associating themselves with it, Mark.
Yeah, I think the problem we've got at the moment is a bit like Rui Spinola, who you met over in Australia on a visit recently, who's actually managing the event for us in October, because he's got a huge academy down there and he's used to putting on massive, massive events. So we're bringing him in and delegating that job to him. So he's going to do that. But to coin one of his phrases, he says, look, Mark, he says, it's a bit like the Wild West at the moment. And it's a bit like the Wild West with walking football, because there is no one governing body. We've got a couple of federations. You've got the IWFF and the FIWFA. And then obviously you've got local national groups and what have you. And there's a lot of jostling for position at the top table to shape the game for the future, which isn't a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there, you know, it's too many cooks and the waters get muddied and stuff. And I think for me, the FIWFA, not because we are the host nation for them and representing them at this tournament, but because I just believe that they have done a great job over 10 years in facilitating the game, growing the game, and their initiatives with training for referees and disability groups. So I think they're, for me at the moment, they're the federation that I'd nail my colours to, and I think you've got to give them a go at it. The problem we've got is that I don't get too political about it, but I think the problem we've got is the FA were caught with their pants down a little bit and they were sitting in the sidelines waiting to see how this game would progress and whether it be just a fad and it would just run out of steam, and it hadn't. And then in that time, the FIWFA, or the WFA, had become the chief administrators for the sport in the UK, which a recent report suggests there's over 100,000 players playing every week in the UK. So, for me, I would run with them at the moment, and hopefully they'll do a good job. The only thing I would say is that I think domestically, I think you've got to have representation from around the various counties, and I think around the world. And you know, you've played and you've played the game and met a lot of people around the world now. I think that if you're going to do it properly, then you've got to have people representing the various continents and various countries and having a say in how things should progress over the next few years.
Yeah, as far as the competitions and whatnot are concerned. Yeah, it's a work in progress, Mark, but it's always been the same with any sport. And football was like that in its early days as well. And Scotland didn't take part in the World Cup for 20-odd years before we decided to deign to go along to the World Cup because we saw it as Mickey Mouse or fantasy football, as I've heard it described recently.
I thought it's because you didn't qualify, Simon.
No, that's latterly. That's the last 50 years. We only go periodically. Hey, don't start. Because I know you're only upset because you've not been made an honorary Scotsman yet. That's for your real. But you'll never make it with power like that, my friend.
I'm still waiting for the freedom of Glasgow.
Well, you better buckle down then. Get rid of that patter. Mark, tell me about, before you tell me about the event, because I want to talk to you about it. I'm coming over for it, looking forward to it with the Scotland or Pollock United select team, if you like. And before we get into that, tell me what's happening locally in Malaga with Walking Football. Still the same vibrancy and growth, even?
Yeah, the same vibrancy and definitely the same growth. Not necessarily in the Malaga region, but across Andalusia. I mean, it's a huge, huge area that encompasses Granada, Almeria, and Sevilla, and Malaga, of course. And then there's a big growth spurt in. It was being led by a couple of individuals who are sort of ex-football professionals and football coaches that are looking to promote the game in Sevilla in particular. So there's three or four emerging teams coming from there.
Yeah.
There's a couple in Cadiz. Mm-hmm. And the challenge now, and this is we're a bit of at a crossroads in some respects locally, is that we've got to embrace these teams and try and find a way of getting them involved in what is a very, very well-established league on the Costa del Sol. Now, the sort of time that the difference in, you know, driving to those places is a couple of hours, which I don't think is insurmountable given that the league is only 9-10 teams in each age group at the moment. So I think we've got to absorb these teams into, find a way of absorbing them into the into the local Andalusian league. And then grow the game from there, because if we don't do that, then there'll just be pockets of Walking Football teams with no fixtures to play or just the odd tournament to play in. So
they'll all start their own leagues, which is
fine. But if we've got an established league here, I don't think 2 hours is insurmountable to go to travel once a season to go and play an away game if it's for the benefit of the game as a whole. So obviously with my team Spain cap on. The whole idea behind this project was, as the game grows in Spain, was to bring in more and more Spanish players and coaches and managers to a point where in 2 or 3 years' time, our percentage of Spanish nationals is somewhere around 60-70% of the teams.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're a bit off that. So it is work in progress.
What Walking Football Scotland have done here very smartly, in my opinion, is created regions. I know the geography's a lot different, a lot smaller, but we've got five regions in Scotland, the west, the north, the east, etc. And those leagues play within themselves. So here in Glasgow, we play in the West of Scotland League, at all age groups. But you can only evolve towards that, Mark, you know. And then we have regional competitions where the five teams will play all these groups as well. And from that, we've actually got a Champions League that go down south and play as well with teams down. There was an event down in Newcastle last year. So there then becomes a pathway for that to happen. But it just takes time and goodwill to get it there.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. I think goodwill is another big factor. You've got to get you've got to not necessarily have your own ideas and not necessarily all sing from the same hymn sheet, but for the good of the game, I think you've got to find pathways to make things happen. Obviously, the geographics here, you've touched on it before, are different. It's a vast country, I think, with double the size of the UK, with half the population or two-thirds of the population. Now, one of the key factors for this World Cup is that we're inviting every single federation. There's 18 federations, 18 regions in Spain, plus the RFEF, which is the Royal Federation for Spanish Football, to the tournament in October, because we think that at the moment they know very little about it. They haven't been you know, we haven't had that dialogue with them yet, and shown them how what a benefit walking football can be to our age groups, mentally, physically, all the stuff we talked about before. But just recently, it's something that a couple of the coaches were talking about, was the potential positive impact that he could have on the very youngest age group. So we've rolled walking football out in the curriculum to some international schools in the Costa del Sol and King's College up in Murcia, to 7 or 8 year olds, and it was really, really well received. And when we asked the pupils why they liked about the game, it said they came back and said, well, it's a game that you've got to think a bit more about. It's not about pace and power and who's quicker than their opponent. It's all about plotting your way, a bit like a game of chess up the pitch. And so that was really well received. And we just think that at that age, that key age group for technical skills, we think that we can advance those technical skills quicker and for more pupils by coaching it at a walking pace, because we think we can break down the various skill sets in a way that it can be comprehended by more players.
Very interesting, Mark. I'm part of a networking group in Glasgow, and it's all sports coaches for different disciplines. And the girl that started it and leads it is a netball coach. She's a real enthusiast in netball and sits on boards and stuff. But there's cross-fertilisation there, not just with walking football and football, but other sports too. And she was talking to me about how she coaches an amateur football side because of the footwork, because girls at basketball, or netball rather, their footwork is really intricate, and there's always things to learn from different sports and different disciplines. That's exactly the same as what you're saying.
That makes perfect sense, Simon, in terms of like the motor skills for young people as well. And like I say, the footwork. So our skipper in Team Spain 50s, Fran, who played in 2023 at St George's Park and who will be our skipper for this year, he didn't play football till he was 35 years of age. Right. His whole background is basketball, but he played a central position in basketball and he plays centre of the park for walking football. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing. If you look at him, you think, well this lad's played football since he was 6 years of age, but he hasn't. Yes. But apparently the positional sense transfers over.
Finding space and
the same pace of the game. So it's something that he sort of basically found very easy to adapt to. But yeah, no, interesting.
I know that you're an avid listener of Sonny G, even though you're so busy just now preparing for the United Nations. And you'll have heard that we recently had Ashley Pedersen of Scottish para football.
Yes.
And all the disciplines that covers. And again, there's cross-fertilisation there. I was talking this week's interview, Jim Buchanan, he was talking about a lad that they have comes to their walking football session, but he plays on crutches because he's an amputee. So it's amazing. Wow. It's the power of football, Mark, isn't it? It's absolutely incredible.
Well, we're fortunate enough to get, special guest teams coming for the World Cup. So we've got the various nations that you know all about, obviously through visiting the website and who's involved. But we've also now got 5 or 6 teams from the UK. We've got the Parkinson's team, both men and ladies, coming down for exhibition matches. We've got Kicking Cancer, men and ladies. We've got England over 65s. Yeah. And then we've got the Brentford Penguins, which I'm really excited about because Brentford's my team. And Cliff Crown is the chairman of Brentford. He's also one of their players. He might be coming down and getting involved as well. But we've got all those games going on, you know, as part of what we see as a festival of football. Certainly not marginalised. It's something that we're gonna really hope is going to help push us into our next you know, our next phase, which will be bringing in, you know, Kicking Cancer Spain and Parkinson's Spain, walking football. So this is all stuff that will radiate out from the tournament.
Yeah. We could go on all day about all the different branches of dementia and all the rest of it, diabetes, chest, heart and stroke here in Scotland. Before we do any of that, I'm going to address my wrong here, if there was one perceived by you, and let you tell us your first tune that you're going to play for us today. And why? And why?
The first tune is Delamitri. I think it's off his first album called Just Like a Man. I was listening to it on the way back from Alicante last week. And it's one of those tunes that he won't be particularly remembered for or known for, but I think it's one of his best. So, I'd like that to be played if you can, Simon. That'd be great.
So, Mark, That was a good tune, by the way, old Justin Curry, who has also got Parkinson's. I don't know if you know that, but Justin came out a year or so ago and told us that he had Parkinson's as well. I need to get him on the show on that basis, old Justin.
Well, I spoke to talking to people on the show, Simon. I spoke, had a two-hour conversation, an update on preparations for the tournament with Paul Carr. And I said to him, I'm due to talk to Simon again at Sunny G. I said it'd be my second appearance or second on the show. He said, and I said, you up for getting on that? He said, yeah, I am. He said, well, look, I'll make it happen because I'm sure he'd like to.
I've messaged him a couple of times. Maybe I've got the wrong number or something, Mark. We'll sort that out.
I'll forward you his number directly after the show, and he can get in contact with you.
Good. Let's look at the teams that are coming then. How do you settle on these teams that are now coming? I'm looking at the men's 50s here.
Yeah.
And we've got, what, 6, 12, about 20?
20, I think.
Yeah.
We've got 20 on paper. We've got 20 as it stands. And I say that because we've got some countries who are very fortunate to be federated and receive a lot of funding. So, for instance, Japan are bringing 5 teams, Australia bringing 6 teams. I mean, the finances behind that is incredible. We're talking over 150, you know, towards 200,000 euros for all that. Which is incredible. And then you've got people like myself who started from scratch. We've got and people like yourself in Scotland and the lady in Wales and what have you. And so these people, you know, they're juggling plates and trying to find sponsors and doing everything. And it's a bit more protracted. So we've got four of those 20 nations, I think, are unconfirmed in that there's visa issues that need to be resolved with the African countries.
Nigeria, Rwanda.
And Rwanda, although Rwanda and Egypt were both in St. George's Park 2023, so we're hopeful they're both going to be there. Morocco have had an ongoing problem with some visa issues, but hopefully we'll get that resolved with some paperwork we've sent over. Right. And then we've got Brazil, who, let's face it, everyone wants Brazil at the World Cup, don't they? And they're just sort of putting the final, dotting the I's and crossing the T's on making their arrangements. So we're hoping that all 20 are going to be there. But if there are some dropouts, then there's potential we're going to have to do a redraw, a bit of shuffling about. But as it stands, it's a hell of a list of countries.
Isn't it? Yeah. Let me just go through them with you then. Japan.
Yeah.
Egypt.
Yeah.
Brilliant. France. Tremendous. Italy.
They'll be very strong. They'll be very strong, France.
Big European. Nigeria, which I was surprised at, to see Nigeria there, but it's brilliant. A great footballing nation, of course. Canada. Now, I'm going to Canada next week, and I've been speaking to a lad in Toronto. Walking football has exploded. In fact, they had a big competition, a big ladies' competition a couple of weeks ago over there. They're really going for it, aren't they?
They are really going for it. They've had great publicity. I've done a couple of interviews with a journalist from a national newspaper over there to try and help that on its way. I'm assuming it's Kerin you've been talking to.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so Kerin he's nailed on, absolute, lives it, breathes it, eats it, walking football. And he's one of the people that are behind the real emergence of walking football in Canada. He's also got brothers that were born in Spain, so he knows the region very well.
Oh,
he's
yes.
over here quite a lot. And every time he comes over, he pitches up and finds a walking football team out of nowhere to train with. So he's just he's one of these people who just sniffs it out. He's one of these people that I think that, you know, if I was next time I was talking to Paul Carr, the CEO of the FIWFA, I said, look, these are the sort of people you need to align yourselves with. People like Kerin, people like Rui, people like yourself, people that can really make things happen and
who get it.
And promote the game. Exactly.
Yeah. I was chatting to somebody, can't remember, on Sunny G, and I was saying to him, every club, you know, every club at club level, at session level, where there's a walking football session, it needs one of him. It was Jim Buchanan I was talking to, who doesn't necessarily play all the time, but he's there all the time. He does the bibs. He makes sure the park's booked. He phones people up to make sure they're all right. You know, that every club needs that. And it's growing now that every region is going to need somebody like that, and every country is going to need a group of people like that that can get together and get things done, isn't it?
It's classic grassroots stuff, isn't it? And this is where, and I'm glad you mentioned this, because look, we're talking about, you know, I sort of, when I say elite tournament, it is a World Cup, and people come from all over the world, so from that perspective, it is an elite tournament. Yep. You know, I would never class myself or anyone, you know, at that level as an elite player. This is essentially a grassroots game, and the success of the game will be whether the grassroots is in a healthy condition or not. And this is where it needs to all start. And then obviously it goes up like a pyramid, like the Football League does, into different levels, and people play it for and get out of the game what they want to, you know, what they've come into the game for. So I was up in Asturias a couple of months ago with the Asturias FA, and they were saying to me they had fantastic participation levels in walking football events they put on, but they were without goalkeepers. And I said, okay, so we had a little chat about that, and then they were worried that they should include goalkeepers and whether they'd be left behind or not taken seriously if they didn't have goalkeepers. I said, look, from my point of view, it doesn't make any difference. It's like, you know, I'd love to have Germany and Holland and some of the European powerhouses at the World Cup that aren't, because currently they play without goalkeepers. And for some people, it's a big deal. For me, it's not a big deal. It's like whatever success, whatever gets people to a walking football pitch, if they carry on coming in big numbers because they enjoy the format which you've started off with, then continue with that. And what happens on natural progression is that people will play it for a while and they say, do you know, I want something a little bit more competitive because my competitive spirit is still there. And then I'll go and look for walking football with goalkeepers and playing tournaments. And that's just something that there'll be a personal choice, but it's nothing that needs to be driven. There's some people in the game, you know, desperate for one set of rules and one size fits all approach. Yeah. And I don't think that's the way forward.
Definitely not. Especially when you think of the... If you're saying that there's 100,000 people playing walking football in England, then there's probably only 5,000 or so that are playing competitive walking football. Maybe 10,000. I don't know. I've no idea what the figures might be. But here in Scotland, it's about a third, a quarter to a third of all the people that go to sessions and enjoy walking football who go to competitive tournaments and whatnot and play for teams.
I think that's a fair percentage. So yeah. I would say about 25-30%.
So the game has to fit, and it's a bit like the para football that you play with crutches or you play with a mask on if you're blind and you're playing with blind people or whatever it might be, that the game has to adapt to be as inclusive as we can make it.
Absolutely, and I think that more powerful voices come from people that are looking to play competitive football and are looking for some sort of reform of a game that doesn't need reform. It's just, look, let's just see how it progresses. So let's not forget the large majority, vast majority of people are playing in social community sessions all around the country and have no interest in cups or leagues or picking up trophies. So,
and the rules adapt to every session, to the lowest denominator. You know, there's some people you would never dream of pulling them up for almost running, you know, because it's great to see that they're getting a bit out. Anyway, let me get back to teams, because there's a couple of ones on here that signify that for me, like Singapore. Do they play our version of walking, or European version of walking football? Because walking football Scotland's different again. We're one of the few that have three touches, I think, Mark. What about Singapore? Is that more family orientated over there? Is it?
I don't know, to be honest, Simon.
Okay.
We play three touches down here. We think it's a faster, without running, we think it's a faster, more technical game. We think the players that have played a certain level or looking to aspire to play a certain level should be able to play three touch. And, you know, that's just my personal thoughts on it. It's Singapore. It radiates out from Didi. So Didi Mahmood, who's she's a big advocate of walking football and a sort of representative of the FIWFA in Asia. The team that's from Singapore is basically her side. But we were lucky to play in a tournament in Bangkok last December, and we had two Malaysian sides there and two Thai sides there. Yeah. And they play the same rules as us, and they were very competitive, but small in number. You know, it's only just started off there, so it's not something that's taken hold yet.
Okay, Australia. It's incredible that they're so active, aren't they? And the distances involved are incredible. They were in Sweden there a month ago as well.
Oh, they go to an opening of a crisp packet, wouldn't they? I mean, they are unbelievable. My hat's off to them. They're unbelievable. I mean, that there's two groups, I believe. There's a Socceroos, I think there's Alan Templeton, who I've never met or spoke to, but I know of. Obviously, Rui, you know, he's like an administrator of the game, and not particularly. Lee Pepper is probably the other big name involved in walking football in Australia. But they're at every event. They're normally in every category.
We talk about geography. They just you're just in a different league, aren't they? When they talk about distances,
levels, it's just like, oh my god,
Because Perth, Australia, is closer to Singapore than it is to their own capital. You know,
is that right?
Ah, oh, yeah, no, it just gets silly. It's hard to imagine even the distances, but they're always there, and they're good fun. They're great fun, Mark.
But you had a fantastic experience down there, didn't you? I get involved with various different walking football groups. There's quite a few.
Yeah, I visited about half a dozen, and as you would imagine, the welcome I got. Yeah. There's lots of expats and Scots and Rangers fans, Celtic fans, all that stuff, you know. So the banter was tremendous, but the welcome was amazing. We love to share our game, don't we?
I'd love them to host a... I mean, one of the federations is next year, the IWFF version, I think, is they're hosting the World Cup. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'd love to get down there. I think next year is going to be too early for us, but in the future, I'd love to. It'd be fantastic. I mean, what a way to shoehorn in the travel. This is the beauty of the game, isn't it? The travel to play walking football, to other cultures, to meet new people and what have you. It's just a great opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah. Every session I went to, there was Scotsmen came over, you know, how you doing, big man, you all right, and all that stuff. Guys from Aberdeen and all over. But what I've said to Brisbane is we should have a Scotland team in Brisbane, but I'm not going to bring one over. We could make an expat Scots team in Brisbane.
I'm sure you could.
Easy peasy. I think they're balking a wee bit. They might lose their best players because obviously Scottish players are usually the elite, you know.
I'll take your word for it, Simon.
Which is probably preventing you becoming a Scotsman now that I think about it. I see the Basque country here. Is that a bit controversial at all?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's enough of that then.
Choose my words, care. No.
Yes.
So... Like a lot of countries, there's a couple of different groups purporting to be the real Basque representative team. At the moment, Jesus has been a big promoter of walking football in that region, and he's the current FIWFA choice for the Basque nation. And he was there in 2023. And he's going to be here in 2025, so we look forward to locking horns with him. But the problem I've got is trying to recruit players from that region, because I was under the impression that I wouldn't be able to recruit players to play for Team Spain from the Basque country. But like anywhere, you've got Spanish nationalists living up there. And Jesus was quick to point out, he said, look, you're missing on a lot of talent here because they won't play for the Basque country. They'd like to play for Team Spain, but you need to come up here and see what they're about to be able to recruit them. So, you know, I'm learning all the time as well. I try not to get too involved in that. I don't want to talk about the subjects I don't need too much about. So you don't want to. Yeah, it's a complicated situation. I mean, it's a bit like Catalonia. So we've got... a gentleman in Catalonia who runs a fantastic social project down there for people with physical mental disabilities. Silvio is an ex-Barcelona player. He's actually originally from Australia. He was going to bring two or three sides to the World Cup Nations, but unfortunately he couldn't get the finances ready in time. And so unfortunately he won't be there now, but he was due to come down. So we would have had the Basque country, Catalonia and Team Spain. But you know what? In a way, if that was a catalyst for better relations and it came about through walking football, mm-hmm. what a hell of a story that would be.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully it'll happen in the future. It's in the pipeline. I've got to talk to both of them. Hopefully we can make something happen in a tri-nation tournament, if that's the right expression for it.
Okay. I noticed here something. I think we've got a scoop here for Sunny G Radio that Jersey's now an independent country.
Wow. Okay. Guernsey were going to come as well, and unfortunately couldn't get the finances, but Jersey are a pretty well established walking football group, and they're going to do, I think they're going to be one of the dark horses in this tournament, I have to say, because we've got a couple of lads who come down on their holidays and train with us at Malaga when they come down, and they're very, very good players, and I think they got to the semi-finals of the over 60s last time round. So if you want an outside bet on a dark horse, I think Jersey would be my team.
Okay, tip from the top there.
Yeah. We'll see. That's probably put the kibosh on now, but there you go.
Cyprus, Wales, Portugal, Rwanda, Colombia. Wow.
Yeah, Colombia, another team.
They'll get stuck at customs for about 2 hours. They'll miss the kickoff. Well, 2 days, maybe.
they would do if you was on duty, Simon. But Again, I think they're another country that have been struggling for sponsorships. So I'm hoping they're going to be there. There's an interesting story around Portugal, because it's not the Portugal our neighbours here in the Balearics. It's a group of Portuguese nationals who live in Australia, so they're coming from Australia.
Wow.
So yeah, to represent Portugal, I played against them, and they were a very handy team. I played against them in Bangkok in December, so they were there, mm-hmm. and they beat the Czech Republic, who were the finalists of the over 50s in England. They beat them 3-1 in Thailand.
Wow.
And again, they're a team out of nowhere, so they're a team to be reckoned with. So I was having a chat with those guys, but they're all absolutely nailed on, passionate Portuguese national.
Yes, yes.
You know, don't see themselves as Australia at all. They've been Australia for years, mm-hmm. But they don't see themselves as Australia, and they're going to be wearing the Portuguese kit with pride. But they are Australian based.
That's interesting. Something I learned a long time ago when I was a policeman in Govan, that people come over from India, Pakistan, whatever, and they make a life here and have families here and whatnot, but they become more Indian or wherever it is they come from, because a lot of times, I've been in India a couple of times, the people in India are more forward-thinking and have moved on. You know, life goes on and they're modern.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
back here, they're still holding on to the values of when they left, maybe in the 50s or 60s or 70s. You become more. I've become more Scottish if I come to Spain. Do you know what I mean? I become more Scottish when I go on holiday to Canada.
Yeah.
I probably speak more Scottish, you know? So there's that dynamic that those Portuguese guys will be fiercely nationalistic with a country and loyal to it because they live in Australia.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what they're, what they're like when they, if we lock horns with Spain, because whether they'll see Spain as the rivals, big rivals they want to beat.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that'll be the case when, I mean, that was an interesting draw, wasn't it? It was drawn in May by the sports minister, tourism minister, and the mayor of Torrevieja. And when I saw Scotland get drawn out in England's group, I thought that'd be interesting. I was looking forward to that fixture.
Where did the seeding come from?
I'll be peeling myself away from duties when that game's been played. I'll be pitch side watching every kick of the ball.
Oh, so, see, you're going back 50 years. It's changed. It's much more friendly now, much more civilised now.
I hope not.
Where did you get the seeding from? I see you've seeded England, Spain, and the Czech Republic. That came from left field for me.
Yeah, I mean, that was due to England and Czech Republic contesting the final in 2023, and I was under the assumption that it'd be Italy would be seeded third because they beat us in the semi-final in third and fourth place playoff on penalties. But Paul Carr decreed that as host nation we were to be seeded, so I wasn't going to argue with that. So that worked out quite well for us, I have to say.
Okay. Who's in your group, Mark?
Do you know what? We could have cherry-picked a more...
That's why I'm asking.
Yes, we are, so I know. So we've got a couple of African nations in there.
All the ones that aren't, you're not sure if they're coming yet.
If they're going to come, well, that could backfire. If two or three don't come, then there's going to have to be a redraw. So it could be a completely, new look to the whole tournament. So we'll see. We're in a group of six, the qualification from that group, so I'm not to go into too much detail, but basically the top two teams of the three groups, because of the amount of teams have had to three groups, otherwise too many group games. So the top two go through, and then the two best placed third place finishes go through to make the final. And it's done on an average of points per game, because we have two groups of seven as it stands at the moment, and one group of six, which Spain are in. And so it has to be done on an average of points gained over the matches played. We'll define the quarterfinalists if that makes sense. I don't know if it does.
And is that all written down, or can you change that on the day to suit yourself?
Hopefully our quality will show through and be in the top two places, but yeah, it remains to be seen.
Mark, let's have another wee tune here. Hopefully you've picked another one for me before I talk to you about referees.
Yeah, I'm thinking he was a massive, massive Paul Weller fan, so if we can have Strange Town, that'd be fantastic.
I think that's the one you asked for before and we ignored you completely, so...
Yeah, I'm sure you will do again, so I'll wait to hear what you select for me.
Here's Paul Weller. Hope.